Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Ventress of the Oregonian, expert on all things football, NFL, college football, coaching football, football cards. Aaron Ventress joining us now. Ryan Day at Ohio State just blowtorching the Big Ten. Don't know if you saw it, Ventress. Okay, so he just blowtorched the Big Ten conference. And for others who didn't see it, I'm going to reread it. Ryan Day basically says he understands the Big Ten conference decision because of health and safety. He says he's disappointed in the communication from the Big Ten. He says we still have an opportunity to give our players a chance to compete for a national championship. He sucks up to his AD and his president, says they've done a good job answering questions. And then he says, I don't have an answer for this question. He puts it on the Big Ten. He says, why can these other teams play and we can't? He says Duke's playing Notre Dame. Clemson's playing Wake Forest. Our players want to know, why can't they play? Is he in the right to do this? He publicly tweeted it out. It's gone viral, of course.
Yeah. I don't think he's wrong, necessarily, because there are games being played. So I think there's a natural inclination to think to yourself, well, why aren't we playing? Like, you know, why is the Pac-12 and the Big Ten sitting out? And these other conferences are playing ball. And I think that does obviously go to the heads of the conferences as to why they felt the need to shut things down. I think a lot of people agree that it's dangerous to play. And that's the other part of this, is that we're in the early stages of the playing. I mean, they're playing now, right? We don't know what it's going to look like in 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 9 weeks. So now, if we get to the end of the season and there's been nothing, you know, horrible that's happened and everything goes off well and they go into a playoff system, then yeah, if you're Oregon and Ohio State, you're going to be sitting there kind of ticked off that you didn't get your shot to be in that dance. But we just won't be able to make that determination for a couple more months. But that being said, there's no doubt people are going to be frustrated. That is a given. But look, you and I have been around football enough and football coaches and players to know that there's a tunnel vision there. And they want to compete, and there's money involved, and there's all these different distractions that do what? They compromise your objectivity. So on one hand, I will say he has every reason to be irritated and want answers and question things. But at the same time, he's not objective about it. And I think more objective people are making these decisions than he is.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too. Mario Cristobal now says 4 to 5 weeks he can be ready to play. Jonathan Smith told me this morning five weeks. He needs 5 weeks. They can play 5 weeks from today if somebody told them they had to play a game. I still think the Pac-12 is going to take their time here, Aaron. And do you think there'll
Back
be any urgency?
We had 3 weeks. I'm serious. Back in my day, when I was at Portland State, we had 2 weeks of daily doubles, which they don't really do anymore. They were true daily doubles. Like, you were padded up both times, and then you had prep week for that game, and then you were on 3 weeks. So, and this is, you know, and now they have way better facilities and equipment and training. So it's funny to me when people are like, well, I need 5 or 6 weeks. So that's my yelling at the cloud moment.
I didn't even stretch before pregame.
Get off my lawn. Exactly. Pregame stretch? What's that for? That's for little babies.
I used to look over at the old guy. He put on his knee brace. He's stretching out, trying to pick up game, and I laugh at him.
Dude,
now,
dude, 10 jumping jacks is all we needed, okay? We were good to go.
Aaron, the coaches say 4 weeks, 5 weeks. I think the Pac-12 is still going to take their time. I still think, you know, the soonest we see football is like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think if things are going well for other conferences, I think you definitely need to have the discussion about, well, now it's time for us to jump on this thing. If the rapid testing is a thing, then I think it's more logical that you could pull it off. I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to, can you keep the kids safe? And I know people say, oh, these athletes are fine, blah, 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 and then the kid from Cal dies, and then it's, oh, he's obese. Oh. Yeah. Offensive linemen, most of the offensive linemen are not built like runway models. Like, that to me is just not a good argument. And we also don't know about the long-term impacts of the disease. Could a kid get it who's going to be fine and give it to a relative who's not going to be fine because family's going to be at these games? So there's a lot of different things to consider that we've all been over a million times. But I think if other conferences are pulling it off, then it makes sense for the Pac-12 to decide if it can as well, with the idea that you can model what you want to do after the success other conferences are having.
I know we all want to see football. Mm-hmm. We want it, right? I think in the end, at what cost, right? What are we willing to sacrifice becomes part of the question. And that's why I look at Ryan Day and I'm like, like you said, they just started to play. We don't know in a week if Alabama's going to have to shut it down and Clemson's going to go, this was all wrong. We were wrong. You know, that potential exists. So I don't mind going slow here.
Agreed. And you know, look what happened with baseball. You had the Marlins just had a huge outbreak. Now they overcame it, right? And then the Cardinals had an outbreak, and there's been some spots here, you know, guys here and there testing positive. But again, the big difference there is what? MLB players are making a lot of money. The college kids are making nothing. And I still think that's a huge factor. Of the one thing when the Pac-12s went after the conference, the Pac-12 players went after the conference, the major component that I agree with 100% in their whole presentation was that you guys only want to play football so badly because there's a lot of money at stake, money we don't see. Now, you can make the scholarship argument all you want. That's fine. Let me just say this real quick. The scholarship argument to me has never – I think the scholarship is important, don't get me wrong, but you can't – I think it's disingenuous to count that as a cost because it's the athletic department paying its university, right? You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so
yeah.
It's like you paying Anna to eat. If Anna was charging you rent and you guys share a bank account, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So yeah. I've always thought that was kind of bogus. I'll never forget when I was serving Florida State and I got their budget and I made that connection when they were talking about how much money they were losing. I'm like, well, wait a minute. You're paying the university for your scholarship money but counting that as a loss. Well, it's a different entity, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, it's cooking the books, I think, a little bit. Not in a negative way. It's legal, but I'm just saying. So the players are out there playing. They're not getting paid while their coach is making $3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 million. The AD's making $500,000, $600,000, $800,000. Their salaries are tied to revenue being generated, but the players don't get a piece of that, but they're at risk of getting COVID and who knows what would happen. So that is a legitimate argument. And I think, you know, if I'm a player, I'm going to question whether or not I should be out there playing, especially if I have NFL potential. Like if I'm going to get drafted soon, the next year, why am I going to go out there? I think that's one reason why we're seeing a lot of these Ducks declare right now.
Aaron Fentress with us of the Oregonian, covers college football and the NFL, among other things. Fentress, the Pac-12 United movement has been quiet, and I thought it was interesting that, you know, I think they were part of the thinking by the Pac-12 presidents and chancellors because they were concerned about testing. Do you think if the Pac-12 decides to play again, Pac-12 United rises back up and becomes an issue for the conference?
You mean if the testing is adequate?
Testing's adequate. Do they still say, look, we want our scholarships guaranteed, our other criteria, or are they satisfied?
Gotcha. That's a tough one. I don't know. I believe that some of their demands were a little over the top, but you always start high, right? You know, like, what you want to be on today? I said $100. You said $1. And I said, okay, I'll take the $1. But I started high, and I think they start high. And then you come down from that. So I think that if some players see the value in playing, then maybe you can reduce those demands, especially if you believe that the Pac-12 is going to make sure you're safe. But that's going to be an interesting question to see because they made a lot of demands that probably aren't realistic. And so if they stick to those demands, then that would probably kill any chance of really coming back, unless it's just, you know, a small percentage of players who are going to stick to those.
Aaron, the NFL starts tonight. How confident are you that they get a season in without interruptions?
Baseball's ability to overcome the outbreaks they've had, I think, was a good sign. Although they did delay, like the Marlins didn't play for a while, and I think the Cardinals didn't as well. So that could be a problem, obviously, if that happened in the NFL. And I think you'd have to adjust to that. But I do think that with the testing that they have in place, I think they're going to be okay. Like, I feel like they're really going to pull it off. So my confidence is high, but I'm not 100%. Let's put it that way.
Who do you like in the NFL? I mean, aside from the Chiefs, who gets your attention? Who are the contenders?
Chiefs, obviously. It'll be interesting to see how Houston's offense looks without DeAndre Hopkins, although they did add Brandon Cook. I'm really curious to see if Jimmy Garoppolo, your boy, can take the next step. I was just amazed at how much garbage he took last year. Like, that was his first full year ever starting. He threw for 27 touchdowns, 4,000 yards, went to the Super Bowl, and all anyone wanted to talk about was the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. It's like, oh, he had a bad quarter in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, so he's garbage, but I think he's going to take another step. If he takes another step, that team's going to be really difficult to beat. Seattle's going to be really good offensively. I think they're going to improve there. Defensively, with Adams, they're going to improve. But my problem with them is offensive line and defensive line. They're pretty weak there. They're marginal. I think that's going to do them in. I think everyone's on the Tampa Bay bandwagon right now because of Tom Brady and Gronk. But, man, he's 42, bro. Like, I just feel like at some point the wheels are going to come off. I just don't feel like they're going to be Super Bowl contenders. They'll make the playoffs. I think they fall off. But let me just say this. You know I'm coming around to this. You know I have to, right? Just because. I think Trubisky's going to take another step, dude. And I think if he does for the Bears with that defense, they're going to be in the mix as well. But if I had to pick a Super Bowl right now, Super Bowl matchup, I would go with Kansas City and the Rams. Now, I know that sounds bizarre because no one's talking about the Rams. But right. The Rams had a setback last year, right? Obviously, they had a setback. But that's still a really good team with an up-and-coming quarterback. And I think Goff will take another step. I'm not wedded to this pick. I'm just saying that I do believe that that is still a really good team with a lot of weapons and a young quarterback still finding himself. And I would not be surprised if they advanced into being a contender again this season.
Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian joining us. If the Seahawks emerge as a surprise, what is going right for them this upcoming season?
Well, they almost won the division last year. Like, I don't think it would be a shock, but they have to figure out this offensive line. They were not very good last year. They replaced Afedi. They made changes at center. I don't know if those are going to be good changes or not. We'll see. But I do think that Seahawks fans this year are going to get what they've been clamoring for, and that's more passing from Wilson. They want him to do what Mahomes did a couple years ago, right? They want him to be a 50-touchdown guy. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think Russell Wilson, for the first time in his career, flirts with 40 touchdowns. The addition of Philip Dorsett, the speed he's going to bring to that offense as the third receiver, that's going to be the best third receiver they've had in a long time. And with Lockett and Metcalf doing what they already do and have a third guy that can fly like that, legit 4-3 guy, that's going to make them even more of a vertical threat team. And Russell Wilson is the best, one of the best, if not the best deep passer in the league. And then you also get Disley back, and you added some insurance and a veteran, maybe future Hall of Famer, and Greg Olsen. So I think we're going to see them tick up. Now, they threw, I think, 516 times last year, which was up from the previous year. I think they get closer to that 600-time mark. I think he goes well over 4,000 yards, close to around 40 touchdowns. So I think Seahawks fans are going to get what they want. The problem is, will the offensive line be good enough to produce in the playoffs against elite defenses? And who are going to be able to lock down better and then get after the quarterback? That's the question.
Aaron Fentress with us. Before I cut you loose, Michael Porter Jr., I know you're a big fan of his. I think he put his foot in his mouth. I got callers who disagree. What did you make of a rookie speaking out?
He's second year, right? He's second year.
No. Yeah, but he's out with...
But he didn't play last year.
He didn't play, so he's in fact, he's going to be a rookie again next year because of the bubble rule.
That's right.
Be like a 40-year-old rookie.
Yeah. No, it's tough when a young player is feeling it and feeling like they've become a star and they want to be in that mix of, you know, being one of the top options. I think you can look at what he said and say maybe he sounded selfish or maybe he overstepped his bounds. I don't think what he said was wrong, though. Like, maybe he shouldn't have said it because it's not his place yet. But he was 5-for-8 and 3-for-4 from three-point range in 34 minutes. So to me, you want to get – it's not like he hasn't dropped 30-plus several times in the bubble. So to me, I would look to get him more shots if he's that hot. At the same time, sometimes the flow of the game just works out to where you just don't get the shots you may normally want, and the two veteran guys who've been far in the playoffs before are not necessarily going to be looking for you when you literally just became a factor like a month ago, right? Like, Murray and Jokic are not going to be like, hey, let's go to Michael Porter. He'll save the day. He's been good for a month. So instinctively for them, they're going to look for each other or look for their own shots to make things happen. So I think Porter was out of line and saying it publicly, but I don't think what he necessarily was saying was wrong because he was on fire. Give that guy more shots.
Aaron Fentress, you're the best.
One more thing.
Yeah.
One more thing.
Yeah.
What'd he do in game one? Remember in game one, he was like missing in action. Well, didn't he have like 0 points heading into the third quarter or something like that?
Yeah.
So that's where he has to be careful. He's not a proven, consistent commodity. That's why he shouldn't have said anything.
Aaron Fentress, you're the best. Thank you, man.
Talk to you later.
All right, there's Fentress. I've got some updates on the wildfire evacuation zones. Now Oregon City on the Beset stage in Clackamas County. That's the yellow stage. Be set to evacuate. You have to be prepared to leave. This level indicates a significant danger to your area. Canby as well. If you're in the Oregon City and Canby areas, you have advanced to yellow. You may not get... another update, but you're advised to pay attention to the evacuation maps on Clackamas County's website. So if you're in Oregon City or Canby, pay attention to that as the danger zone there has expanded in the last 15 minutes. Leave it here. You got the BFT. We'll go to Salt Lake City in the 2 o'clock hour. Josh Newman, who covers Utah football, will be joining us. Anna will pop in, as I mentioned earlier, an update in Clackamas County. If you're in Oregon City or Canby, you need to take a look at the evacuation wildfire map on Clackamas County's website. You're now in yellow, which means be ready. I want to check in around the state. Your phone calls here at 503-417-7575. Cadillac Chris Brown, our correspondent, is live in Eugene, and he'll join us here.
When there's big news,
I'll hear this.
We hit the streets. Now welcome the Bald-Faced Truth Street Correspondent.
Cadillac Chris Brown, set the scene for us where you are.
Oh, hi. It's good to talk to you again. That old music is quite the memory. You know, down here in Eugene, it is not good. There's no good way to spin it. It is hazy and uncomfortable, and it stinks. It smells like a campfire.
The air quality bad. Are you in evacuation mode at all? Are people there concerned about having to leave their homes, or at this point, is it just unhealthy, hazardous air?
It's a little bit of all the above, because, like, I'm in North Eugene, but if you are in Springfield, you know, on the east side of I-5, you are probably in more panic mode than I am right now, but we're definitely packed. Like, we've got it, you know, we've gone through the list of things to pack and what we want to take, and we've got dog food ready, and we're prepared, but, you know, at the moment, it's one of those, it's not imminent yet, but we're on alert.
You've seen other parts of the country. You've lived in the Pacific Northwest for some time. Give us an idea in, you know, what you see, and as you talk to people, the devastation, the destruction, the fear. I mean, this is all new stuff. I mean, wildfires have happened in this state. I have not seen it like this.
I haven't either. I've never seen anything like this. You know, you see it on TV in California every year, and you're like, well, you know, that's awful, and you feel bad for everybody, and it breaks your heart. And now it's one of those where it's hitting more close to home, and the panic sets in. And, like, I was at Detroit Lake last weekend, and the little neighborhood store there that we went and bought beer at is gone.
Yeah.
Like, everything around there is gone. The campfire is in grave danger if it's not already burned. And, like, when you see that somewhere you were at just 4 days ago, gone, it hits you, and you get really thankful for what you have.
As you packed up, Cadillac Chris Brown, you mentioned dog food and other things. Did you find yourself kind of perplexed at what it is? You find, you know, yourself going, all right, this is a must-have?
Oh, absolutely. I've realized we have a lot of junk. Like, I thought that my wife was a bit of a hoarder, and I've realized that she's not ready for TV yet, but we have more stuff that, you know, was just kind of inconsequential. And you kind of, you know, you go through your stuff and you look at it, you're like, I don't really care about that. I don't really care about that. I don't really care about that. And so, in fact, right now my wife is on her way to go deliver a car full of stuff to one of the donation centers and then go volunteer for a few hours. I'm on dog patrol today.
Cadillac Chris Brown, I appreciate you checking in, man. It's good to hear your voice. Keep us posted in the Eugene, Springfield area. You know, I know a lot of listeners in that area who are concerned and kind of watching the evacuation maps with one eye and hearing all the destruction in the news and, you know, everybody sort of in it together. I appreciate you sharing, man.
Hey, my pleasure. I'm here for you anytime.
All right, Cadillac Chris Brown. He says his wife's a hoarder but not ready for TV yet. I love that. I might reuse that. Let's go to Mike, who's in Seattle. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, so, John, thanks for taking the call from Seattle.
Bet.
And my thoughts and prayers to all the people down there who are in the smoke and the fire. It sounds pretty devastating. The purpose of my call was great article in Seattle Times today, and it has Jen Cohen in there in a pretty lengthy article about the dire straits, you know, that Washington is in financially, as this thing goes on, and the presentation that she's making to the board of directors of Washington today. And it really gets into the detail about what might be happening if this thing doesn't turn around real quickly. It talks about there could be sports cut, there could be other things taken. Then on Jason Puckett's show, who you talked to the other day, you know, he's calling out coaches and administrators who are making big six-figure numbers, and to take a 5% cut, that is a drop in the bucket. And how, yeah. And then I think about Oregon State, Oregon, Portland State, Eastern Oregon. I'm not seeing any articles in any of our papers, you know, where they really get into the detail about the financial dire straits and yeah. And the situation. And I think they need to do that so that us as donors can come to grips with, oh my gosh, we have to start helping right now. And it's not acceptable, you know, to take a donation that we made for football.
Yeah,
and move
it's
out
a good
of here.
Point.
It needs to be.
It's a good point. I'm up against a break here. It's a great point. We're going to talk about it on the other side of the break. Utah's entire athletic department on furloughs. We'll talk with the beat reporter who covers Utah, and I'll touch on that. Great call from Mike. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.